Chapter 5, The Medieval Indian Empire. A King Named Skandagupta. If you were traveling during the Middle Ages, you'd have to be careful where you went. Barbarian tribes had settled in many of the lands that used to belong to Rome. There was no king or emperor to keep the peace. Instead, many different war leaders ruled over little pieces of land, and these war leaders were always fighting with each other. You might be riding innocently along, going to visit your cousins far away, and get caught in the middle of a battle between war bands. But travel in the Byzantine Empire was much safer. You could ride your horse along the roads in peace. Justinian and the other emperors made sure that their subjects obeyed the laws. And the soldiers of the Byzantine army helped protect the people from robbers and invaders. You could also feel safe traveling down into India. Like Byzantium, India had a king who ruled over a large, peaceful empire. Imagine that you decide to leave Byzantium and go south. You ride for days and days. Slowly, you begin to see a line of mountains ahead of you, mountains that seem to touch the sky. These are the Himalayas, the highest mountains in the world. Mount Everest, the tallest peak in the Himalayas, juts up almost into space. Up on top of Mount Everest, the air is too thin to breathe, and snow and ice stay on the mountains all year long. As you begin to come down the other side of the mountain range, you see villages tucked into the rocky slopes. The people who live here are tough and strong. They raise llamas and mountain sheep and make warm clothing from their fleece. You ride further south, veering a little to the west. The air grows hotter and hotter. The ground becomes sandy and flat. Your horse stumbles in the deep sand. Sweat rolls down your face. When the wind blows, sand whirls up from the ground. It gets into your mouth, your eyes, and your clothes. This is the Thar Desert, where it hardly ever rains. You decide you'd better get out of the desert, so you head east. Slowly, you begin to see trees and grass. The sand gives way to dry dirt, and then to rich black soil. Ahead of you, you can see the blue gleam of a river. You've come to the Ganges, the most important river in India. Every year, the Ganges overflows and leaves damp black silt all over the ground. This silt is like fertilizer. It makes crops grow. Houses are all around you. Thousands of people live here near the river. In your journey, you've seen mountains, deserts, and river villages. But this is only a small part of India. If you were to keep on going south, you would cross over more mountains and rivers, and eventually you would come to the coast of India, where palm trees grow in tropical jungles along the edge of the sea, and where villagers hunt tigers and ride elephants. India has many different parts to it, so for hundreds of years the Indian people lived in many small different kingdoms. But a man named Chandragupta wanted to make all of those kingdoms into one large Indian empire. At first, Chandragupta only ruled a little kingdom near the Ganges River, but he managed to conquer a few of the little kingdoms nearby. His son conquered a few more, and his grandson conquered even more. Eventually, Chandragupta's descendants ruled over the whole upper part of India. Chandragupta had founded a dynasty, a family that rules over one area of the world for many years. Listen to the names of some of the kings in this dynasty. Chandragupta, Samudragupta, Kumargupta, and Skandagupta. All of these kings were part of the Gupta dynasty. Under the Guptas, India became peaceful and rich. Indian poets and playwrights wrote great works in the Indian language, Sanskrit. Artists painted and sculpted in copper and iron. Scholars wrote learned books about mathematics and astronomy. Indian doctors even learned how to reattach ears and noses that had been cut off. This is often called the Golden Age of India. But then the barbarians came. Barbarian tribes called the Huns had already attacked Rome and Byzantium. Now they swooped down into India. If the people of India had still been divided into many small kingdoms, the Huns might have been able to destroy them. But the king of India, Skandagupta, rallied all his people together into one strong army. And with Skandagupta to lead them, the Indians managed to drive the Huns away from their empire. Skandagupta's people praised him for saving them. They made coins with his picture on them. They carved his portrait into rock. Skandagupta has been embraced by the goddess of wealth and splendor, they exclaimed. India had survived the barbarian attacks, but fighting off the Huns had made India poorer and weaker. Slowly, the different parts of the empire began to divide into separate small kingdoms once more. The golden age of India had ended. Monks in caves. Do you remember the monks of England? Instead of having families, they lived together in monasteries and spent their lives working and praying. India also had monks. These monks were followers of a man called the Buddha. The Buddha was an Indian prince who had left his palace many years before to live the life of a beggar. He taught that anyone, no matter how poor, sick, or miserable, could find happiness by leading a good life. In England, the monks lived in buildings made of wood or stone. But the Indian monks who lived near the mountains carved their monastery right out of the sides of cliffs. They had large caves where they met and ate together around tables made out of stone. Small bare caves called cells surrounded these large caves. In their cells, the monks could go to be alone, to sleep, or to think about the teachings of the Buddha. Passageways and stone bridges connected the caves together. The monks worked for years to build their monastery. They didn't have dynamite or explosives to carve out the caves. Instead, they hacked long trenches into the rock with iron tools. Then they put logs into the trenches and filled the trenches with water. The logs soaked up the water and began to swell. As they swelled, they pushed against the sides of the rock and cracked it into bits. When the caves were dug out, the monks started to decorate them. They carved away at the walls with tiny sharp chisels, just a little wider than your thumb. Bit by bit, beautiful sculptures emerged from the stone walls. Some of the stone figures show scenes from the life of the Buddha. Other figures seem to act out stories that the Buddha told. Stone elephants as large as life stand at the entrances to several caves. In one of the caves, the rock ceiling is carved to look like the wooden rafters in an old temple. A huge statue of the Buddha sits beneath the rafters on an enormous rock throne. In other caves, the monks painted frescoes. They covered the rough stone walls and ceilings with fresh plaster and then painted on the plaster while it was still wet. When the plaster dried, the painting dried with it and became part of the wall. Frescoes stay bright and colorful for years, but painting on fresh plaster is like painting on pudding. If the painter makes a mistake, he can't wipe it out. He has to paint perfectly the very first time. These caves are called the Ajanta Caves. The monks lived in them for years and years, but slowly they moved away to other monasteries. The caves were used less and less. Most people in India forgot they were there. Only a few pilgrims remembered the Ajanta Caves. Hundreds of years later, two soldiers were out hunting. They tracked a tiger into a deserted valley filled with trees and shrubs. They were searching through the brush for tiger tracks when they found the entrance to the Ajanta Caves. Inside the caves, the stone elephants, the carved Buddha, and the colorful paintings lay undisturbed, just as they had been since the monks left. The officers told everyone they knew about the caves. More and more people came to see the sculptures and frescoes. Soon hundreds of people were visiting the caves every day. Some of the visitors began to take away parts of sculptures to put in museums. They even cut the heads off some of the paintings. But before the sculptures and paintings could be destroyed, the government of India ordered wire screens to be put up around them. Now the Ajanta Caves are safe, and visitors can still see the art created by the monks of India more than 1,000 years ago.